Standing alone in Anathoth Community Garden on the first Sunday of Advent, Fred Banson confronted an uncomfortable truth. He had poured himself so completely into 5 acres of vegetables that nothing remained for his family. The garden had become an extension of his body, yet his soul was withering. This moment of spiritual reckoning launched him on a pilgrimage across America to discover how faith communities were reconnecting spirituality and agriculture. What he found wasn't just about growing food, it was about cultivating the human spirit through soil. The timing of his journey proved significant. Americans were increasingly questioning industrial food systems, hungry for more meaningful connections to what they eat. But Banson's quest ran deeper than the farm-to-table movement. He sought to understand how working the earth could become a spiritual practice, how dirt under fingernails might lead to God. At 3 a.m. in December, a buzzer summons Trappist monks from their cells into 20-degree darkness at Mepkin Abbey in South Carolina. They glide silently toward the Abbey Church, where incense lingers near a bare granite altar beside a leafless poplar, winter's barrenness symbolizing Advent's expectant waiting. Banson seeks a rooted spirituality, hoping to meet Jesus crouching in the dirt. The monks live by ora et labora, prayer and work, the balance that had eluded him at Anathoth. He joins their mushroom operation, packing pasteurized wheat chaff into long plastic tubes. Brother Anthony Maria, a former Philadelphia cab driver, came because I wanted to pray like St. Anthony and become light. Brother Dismas arrived after theology studies at Notre Dame, realizing he needed to put the faith in my hands. For these monks, manual labor is incarnational. Jesus became flesh, muscle, sinew. He put his body where the question was. During his final vespers, the Lord's Prayer breaks Banson open. These monks confront their wayward hearts while seeking divine mystery. Father Kevin advises 20 minutes of daily silence and cultivating gratitude, which leads to humility, then praise, and finally attention to those with whom we share life. Most aren't called to solitude, Kevin reminds him, but to embrace God while embracing one another. Before becoming a gardener, Banson sought peace as a Christian activist in Chiapas, Mexico. In 2001, after divinity school and nonviolent training, he joined Las Abejas, the Bees, a Mayan Catholic civil society targeted by government persecution. Their motto? Our weapon is the Word of God. Fellow activist Lino cultivated the Three Sisters, corn, beans, and squash, using indigenous techniques. The corn provided structure for climbing beans, which fixed nitrogen, while squash vines covered soil to retain moisture. This ancient agricultural wisdom would later inform Banson's farming. On Maundy Thursday, Jose invited him home, where his wife Angelina prepared traditional breakfast. Banson watched her make waj, tortillas, from masa ground on an ancient mortar pass through generations. Speaking tzotzil while eating waj and chinek, black beans, felt like participating in an ancient liturgy. After breakfast, Jose and Banson hiked to his coffee fields. With only machetes, they cleared woody weeds and laid them against the slope to prevent erosion. This simple work felt like co-creation with God. The Abejas embodied the Hebrew understanding of shalom, a completeness where God, people, and land dwell in harmony. Before parting, Jose handed Banson a bag of yellow maize seeds. Los sembras en su propio suelo, plant them in your own soil. On a San Cristobal rooftop, reading Isaiah 30, he understood his calling. This is the way, walk in it. That summer, he planted his first garden on his parents' North Carolina land. Crows ate Jose's maize kernels, his first lesson in farming's patience. During the Great Depression, Presbyterian minister James McClure revived biblical tithing by encouraging farmers to plant an extra acre for God. The initiative spread rapidly but faded after World War II. In 2008, Banson's father-in-law, Will Hamilton, resurrected this vision, creating a communal food garden for the local food pantry. Garden manager Susan Sides embodied remarkable grace. When Emma, a troubled neighbor, stole watermelons, Susan responded with patience rather than retaliation. The half-acre garden produced 8 tons of vegetables annually for Food for Fairview, serving 75 families weekly. Beyond feeding the hungry, the Lord's Acre created space where Christians and non-Christians worked together harmoniously. As Susan noted, "Everyone who comes here hungers for something. Some hunger for food, others hunger for community, or beauty, but we all hunger." The garden inspired the Fairview Welcome Table, a weekly community feast with white tablecloths and silverware, free to anyone. As one participant explained, "Food is the physical embodiment of prayer. When people are fed, they are warm and relaxed." Wednesday evenings featured community workdays with potlucks and music, transforming agricultural labor into celebration. After Bill King's 2004 murder, Zenobia Taylor, a Black landowner descended from sharecroppers, donated 5 acres to Cedar Grove UMC for a community garden. Pastor Grace invited Bonson to lead it. Despite having no backup plan, he quit his writing job in August 2005, responding to an unmistakable presence, a holy kind of foolishness. Reading Jeremiah, he discovered their mission: plant gardens and eat what they produce, and seek the shalom of the city. Shalom isn't merely peace, but living harmoniously with community and land. Their situation was complex. They weren't exiles, but privileged landowners surrounded by the truly marginalized: rural poor, migrant workers, and addicts. Within 5 miles, 20 families lacked indoor plumbing. NAFTA had displaced many Latinos to North Carolina. Welcoming these landless people to Anathas Garden became their way of seeking shalom. Not everyone supported the garden. Some of Zenobia's family questioned giving land to a white church. Church members feared theft or violence. The land sat near Bill King's murder site and crack houses. When someone suggested building closer to the church, Pastor Grace replied, "The reasons you don't want to build the garden down there are exactly the reasons why we should." The garden became the community's beating heart. Burley arrived on his flag-festooned riding lawnmower, finding purpose maintaining the grounds. 92-year-old Miss Marie whispered encouragement to each seed. Clarence, a young man with severe disabilities, found comfort resting his head on Bonson's shoulder. Adela, recently widowed and relocated from Mishawakin, discovered solace in familiar agricultural rhythms. Banson's pilgrimage led him to Tierra Nueva, New Earth, in Washington's Skagit Valley, where Bob and Gracie Ekblad created a transformative ministry serving migrant workers, gang members, and those struggling with addiction. Their one-acre farm relied on juvenile offenders performing court-mandated community service. Among them was Porky, a young Latino who discovered that agricultural rhythms offered a compelling alternative to getting high all day. Through planting and harvesting, these youths learned patience and delayed gratification, qualities contrasting sharply with street life's immediate rewards. The most compelling story centered on Bones, once the most feared gang shot caller in Skagit Valley. His childhood was marked by sexual abuse, extreme violence, and witnessing his stepfather's suicide. By 29, having spent nearly half his adult life behind bars, Bones experienced a spiritual awakening and conceived Hope for Homies, a farm-based rehabilitation program for troubled youth. During Banson's prison visit, Bones articulated his dream with surprising tenderness, creating a peaceful garden sanctuary where children could play without fear. Searching for words, he finally landed on embrace, a powerful metaphor for both the acceptance he sought and hoped to offer others. A year after Mepkin Abbey, Banson settled on his parents' mountain farm, creating a permaculture orchard and terraced beds where he once fed crows with Jose's maize. Despite modest income from directing a divinity school food and faith program, their subsistence garden provides year-round vegetables, a dozen fruits, and a life that feels indescribably rich, abundant, blessed. Father Kevin's wisdom proves true. The more Banson gives thanks, the more he sees everything as gift. Inspired by Mepkin, he cultivates shiitake mushrooms, watching mycelium connect dead wood with living soil in reciprocal relationship. Anathoth's vision of shalom continues spreading through dozens of faith-infused garden projects worldwide. Unlike coffee shops where people stare at screens, communal gardens create genuine interaction across boundaries. Examples flourish: Genesis Farms, eco nuns practicing green Christianity, London Farrell Community Garden serving racial reconciliation in Kentucky, Crossfire United Methodist Church, a congregation of bikers, ex-convicts, and recovering addicts running food ministries in North Carolina's poorest counties. Man, all this time, Pastor Duncan says, bikers just want people to know that we're people too. For those starting similar projects, Banson offers guidance. Find land, even poor land. You can create good soil. Secure water. Avoid fences. Buy only the best tools. Use machines sparingly. Plant the best organic seed in compost-fed soil. Most importantly, welcome the strays, the rejects, the outliers. Though you need responsible workers, your garden is primarily for the widow, the exhausted migrant worker, the troubled souls with shadowed fears. Find the meek and lowly. Love them. They are your garden's prize crop, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Soil opens us inward to God's mercy and outward to the needs of others. Our hunger defines us, one part pain, one part desire, and we shouldn't be ashamed of our oik to be filled. In a world that has forgotten how to be still, the garden offers an ancient answer. Plant seeds, tend soil, welcome strangers, break bread together. This is how we cultivate not just food, but shalom, the deep peace where God, people, and land dwell in harmony.